36 gods watched over the city, and there were thrice as many temples to them scattered throughout. And with each one Nezrin passed, she wondered if those gods were peering out from the pillars or behind the carved rocks, if they watched from the eaves of that sloped roof, or from behind the spotted cat's eyes where it lay half awake on the temple steps. She beseeched all of them to make her feet swift and silent, to guide her where she needed to go while she prowled the streets. If a Volg agent had come to this continent, or worse, a possible Volg prince, Nezrin scanned the rooftops and the gargantuan pillar of the Torre. It gleamed bone white in the moonlight, a beacon watching over this city, the healers within. Kaol and Irene had made no progress today, but it was fine. Nezrin reminded herself again and again that it was fine. These things took a while. Even if Irene... It was clear she had some personal reservations regarding Kaol's heritage, his former role in the Empire. Nezrin paused near an alley entrance while a band of young revelers staggered past, singing bawdy songs that would surely make her aunt scold them, and later hum along herself. As she monitored the alley, the bordering flat rooftops, Nezrin's attention snagged on a rough carving in the earthen brick wall. An owl at rest, its wings tucked in, those unearthly large eyes wide and eternally unblinking. Perhaps no more than vandalism, yet she brushed a gloved hand over it, tracing the lines etched into the building's side. Antica's owls. They were everywhere in this city. Tribute to the goddess worshipped perhaps more than any other of the 36. No chief god ruled the southern continent, yet Silba. Nezrin again studied the mighty tower, shining brighter than the palace on the opposite end of the city. Silba reigned unchallenged here. For anyone to break into that torre, to kill one of the healers, they had to be desperate. Or utterly insane. Or a Volg demon, with no fear of the gods, only of their master's wrath if they should fail. But if she were a Volg in this city, where to hide? Where to lurk? Canals ran beneath some of the homes, but it was not like the vast sewer network of Rifthold. Yet, perhaps if she studied the Torre's walls. Nezrin aimed for the gleaming tower, the Torre looming with each nearing step. She paused in the shadows beside one of the homes across the street from the solid wall that enclosed the Torre's entire compound. Torches flickered along brackets in the pale wall. Guards stationed every few feet, and atop it. Royal guards, judging from their colors, and Torre guards in their cornflower blue and yellow. So many that none would get by without notice. Nezrin studied the iron gates, now sealed for the night.
Were they open last night is the answer no guard wants to yield.
Nezrin whirled, her knife angled low and up. Prince Sartak leaned against the building wall a few feet behind her, his gaze on the looming Torre. Twin swords peaked above his broad shoulders, and long knives hung from his belt. He'd changed from the finery of dinner back into his flying leathers, again reinforced with steel at the shoulders, silver gauntlets at his wrists, and a black scarf at his neck. No, not scarf, but a cloth to pull over his mouth and nose when the heavy hood of his cloak was on. To remain anonymous, unmarked. She sheathed her knife.
Were you following me?
The prince flicked his dark, calm eyes to her.
You didn't exactly try to be inconspicuous when you left through the front gate, armed to the teeth.
Nezrin turned toward the Torre walls.
I have no reason to hide what I'm doing.
You think whoever attacked the healers is just going to be strolling around?
His boots were barely a scrape against the ancient stones as he approached her side.
I thought to investigate how they might have gotten in, get a better sense of the layout, and where they'd likely find appealing to hide.
A pause.
You sound as if you know your prey intimately. and didn't think to mention this to me during our ride this morning, was the unspoken rest.
Nezrin glanced sidelong at Sartak. I wish I could say otherwise, but I do. If the attack was made by whom we suspect. I spent much of this spring and summer hunting their kind in Rifthold.
Sartak watched the wall for a long minute. He said quietly, How bad was it?
Nezrin swallowed as the images flickered. The bodies, and the sewers, and the glass castle exploding, a wall of death flying for her.
Captain Falik.
A gentle prod. A softer tone than she'd expect from a warrior prince. What did your spies tell you?
Sartak's jaw tightened, shadows crossing his face before he said,
They reported that Rifthold was full of terrors. People who were not people. Beasts from Vanth's darkest dreams.
Vanth, goddess of the dead. Her presence in this city predated even Silba's healers.
Her worshippers a secretive sect that even the Khagan and his predecessors feared and respected. Despite her rituals being wholly different from the eternal sky, to which the Khagan and the Dargon believed they returned.
Nezrin had walked swiftly past Vanth's dark-stoned temple earlier. The entrance marked only by a set of onyx steps, descending into a subterranean chamber lit with bone-white candles.
I can see that none of this sounds outlandish to you, said Sartak.
A year ago it might have. Sartak's gaze swept over her weapons.
So you truly faced such horrors, then?
Yes, Nezrin admitted. For whatever good it did, considering the city is now held by them. The words came out as bitterly as they felt.
Sartak considered.
Most would have fled, rather than face them at all.
She didn't feel like confirming or denying such a statement, no doubt meant to console her. A kind effort from a man who did not need to do such things. She found herself saying, I saw your mother earlier, walking alone through a garden.
Sartak's eyes shuddered.
Oh?
A careful question.
Nezrin wondered if she perhaps should have held her tongue, but she continued. I only mention it in case it is something you might need. Might want to know.
Was there a guard, a handmaiden with her?
None that I saw.
That was indeed worry tightening his face, as he leaned against the wall of the building.
Thank you for the report.
It was not her place to ask about it. Not for anyone, and certainly not for the most powerful family in the world. But Nezrin said quietly, My mother died when I was 13.
She gazed up at the near-glowing Tore.
The old king. You know what he did to those with magic. To healers gifted with it. So there was no one who could save my mother from the wasting sickness that crept up on her. The healer we managed to find admitted to us that it was likely from a growth inside my mother's breast. That she might have been able to cure her before magic vanished.
Before it was forbidden.
She had never told anyone outside of her family this story. Wasn't sure why she was really telling him now. But she went on. My father wanted to get her on a boat, to sail here. Was desperate to. But war had broken out up and down our lands. Ships were conscripted into Otterland's service. And she was too sick to risk a land journey all the way down to Eelway to trot across there. My father combed through every map, every trade route. By the time he found a merchant who would sail with them, just the two of them, to Antica, my mother was so sick she could not be moved. She would not have made it here, even if they'd gotten on the boat.
Sartak watched her, face unreadable, while she spoke.
Nezrin slid her hands into her pockets. So she stayed. And we were all there when it was over. That old grief wrapped around her, burning her eyes. It took me a few years to feel right again, she said after a moment. 2 years, before I started noticing things like the sun on my face or the taste of food, started enjoying them again. My father, he held us together, my sister and I. If he mourned, he did not let us see it. He filled our house with as much joy as he could. She fell silent, unsure how to explain what she'd meant by starting down this road. Sartak said at last,
"Where are they now? After the attack on Rifthold?"
"I don't know," she whispered, blowing out a breath. "They got out, but I don't know where they fled, or if they will be able to make it here, with so many horrors filling the world."
Sartak fell quiet for a long minute, and Nezrin spent every second of it wishing she'd just kept her mouth shut. Then the prince said,
"I will send word, discreetly."
He pushed off the wall.
"For my spies to keep an eye out for the Falik family, and to aid them should they pass their way. In any form they can, to safer harbors."
Her chest tightened to the point of pain, but she managed to say,
"Thank you."
It was a generous offer. More than generous. Sartak added,
"I am sorry for your loss, as long ago as it was. As a warrior, I grew up walking hand in hand with death. And yet this one, it has been harder to endure than others. And my mother's grief perhaps even harder to face than my own."
He shook his head, the moonlight dancing on his black hair, and said with forced lightness,
"Why do you think I was so eager to run out after you into the night?"
Nezrin, despite herself, offered him a slight smile in return. Sartak lifted a brow.
"Though it would help to know what exactly I'm supposed to be looking for."
Nezrin debated what to tell him, debated his very presence here. He gave a low, soft laugh when her hesitation went on a moment too long.
"You think I'm the one who attacked that healer? After I was the one who told you about it this morning?"
Nezrin bowed her head.
"I mean no disrespect.
Even if she'd seen another prince enslaved this spring, had fired an arrow at a queen to keep him alive.
Your spies were correct. Rifthold was. I would not wish to see Antica suffer through anything similar."
"And you're convinced the attack at the Torre was just the start?"
"I'm out here, aren't I?"
Silence. Nezrin added,
"If anyone, familiar or foreign, offers you a black ring or collars, if you see anyone with something like it, do not hesitate, not for a heartbeat. Strike fast and true. Beheading is the only thing that keeps them down. The person within them is gone. Don't try to save them, or it will be you who winds up enslaved as well."
Sartak's attention drifted to the sword at her side, the bow and quiver strapped to her back. He said quietly,
"Tell me everything that you know."
"I can't."
The refusal alone could end her life, but Sartak nodded thoughtfully.
"Tell me what you can, then."
So she did. Standing in the shadows beyond the Torre walls, she explained everything she could, save for the keys and gates and Dorian's enslavement, as well as that of the former king. When she'd finished, Sartak's face had not changed, though he rubbed at his jaw.
"When did you plan to tell my father this?"
"As soon as he'd grant us a private meeting."
Sartak swore, low and creative. "With my sister's death, it's been harder for him than he'll admit to return to our usual rhythms. He will not take my counsel, or anyone else's."
It was the worry in the prince's tone, and sorrow, that made Nezrin say,
"I'm sorry."
Sartak shook his head.
"I must think on what you told me. There are places within this continent, near my people's homeland."
He rubbed at his neck.
"When I was a boy, they told stories at the Ares of similar horrors."
He said more to himself than her.
"Perhaps it is time I paid my hearth mother a visit, to hear her stories again." and how that ancient threat was dealt with long ago, especially if it is now stirring once more. A record of the Vogue? Here? Her family had never told her any such tales. But then her own people had hailed from distant reaches of the continent. If the Rook Riders had somehow either known of the Vogue, or even faced them. Footsteps scuffed on the street beyond, and they pressed into the walls of the alley, hands on their sword hilts. But it was only a drunk stumbling home for the night, saluting the Tore guards along the wall as he passed, earning a few laughing grins in return. Are there canals beneath here? Nearby sewers that might connect to the Tore? Her question was little more than a push of air.
I don't know,
Sartak admitted with equal quiet. He smiled grimly as he pointed toward an ancient grate in the sloped stones of the alley.
But it would be my honor to accompany you in discovering one.
Chapter 14. Irene didn't care if someone came to murder her in her sleep. By the time the solemn candlelit vigil in the Tore courtyard had finished. By the time Irene crawled to her room near the top of the Tore, two acolytes propping her between them after she'd collapsed at the base of the stairs, she didn't care about anything. Cook brought her dinner in bed. Irene managed a bite before she passed out. She awoke past midnight with her fork on her chest and spiced slow-cooked chicken staining her favorite blue gown. She groaned, but felt slightly more alive. Enough so that she sat up in the near darkness of her tower room, and rose only to see to her needs and haul her tiny desk in front of the door. She stacked books and any spare objects she could find atop it, checked the locks twice, and stumbled back into bed, still fully clothed. She awoke at sunrise. Precisely when she said she'd meet Lord Kaol. Cursing, Irene hauled away the desk, the books, undid the locks, and flung herself down the tower stairs. She'd ordered the brace for his horse to be brought directly to the castle courtyard, and she'd left her supplies at his room yesterday. So there was nothing for her to take beyond her own frantic self as she hurtled down the endless spiral of the Tore, scowling at the carved owls passing silent judgment. While she flew by doors now beginning to open to reveal sleepy-faced healers and acolytes blinking blearily at her. Irene thanked Silba for the restorative powers of deep, dreamless sleep as she sprinted across the complex grounds, past the lavender-lined pathways, through the just-opened gates. Antica was stirring. The streets mercifully quiet as she raced for the palace perched on its other side. She arrived in the courtyard 30 minutes late, gasping for breath, sweat pooling in every possible crevice of her body. Lord Westfall had started without her. Gulping down air, Irene lingered by the towering bronze gates, the shadows still lying thick with the sun so low on the horizon, and watched the unfolding mounting. As she'd specified, the patient-looking roan mare was on the shorter side. The perfect height for him to reach the saddle horn with an upraised hand. Which he was currently doing, Irene noted with no small degree of satisfaction. But the rest? Well, it seemed he'd decided not to use the wooden ramp, that she'd also ordered crafted in lieu of a stepped mounting block. The mounting ramp now sat by the still-shadowed horse pens against the eastern wall of the courtyard. As if he'd outright refused to even go near it, and instead had them bring over the horse, to mount the mare on his own. It didn't surprise her one bit. Kaol did not look at any of the guards clustered around him, at least more than was necessary. With their backs to her, she could only identify one or two by name, but one stepped in silently to let Kaol brace his other hand on his armor-clad shoulder. As the lord pushed himself upright in a mighty heave, the mare stood patiently while his right hand gripped the saddle horn to balance himself. She stepped forward, just as Lord Westfall pushed off the guard's shoulder and into the saddle, the guard stepping in close as he did it. It left him sitting side saddle,
but Kaol still did not give the guard much thanks beyond a tight nod. Instead, he silently studied the saddle before him, assessing how he was to get one leg over the other side of the horse. Color stained his cheeks, his jaw a tight line. The guards lingered, and he stiffened, tighter and tighter. But then he moved again, leaning back in the saddle and hauling his right leg over the horn. The guard who'd helped him lunged to support his back, another darting from the other side to keep him from tumbling off. But Kaol's torso remained solid, unwavering. His muscle control was extraordinary. A man who had trained that body to obey him no matter what, even now. And he was in the saddle. Kaol murmured something to the guards that had them backing off as he leaned to either side to buckle the straps of the brace around his legs. It had been set into the saddle, the fit perfect based on the estimations she'd given the woman in the workshop. Designed to stabilize his legs, replacing where his thighs would have clamped to keep him steady, just until he became used to riding. He might very well not need them at all, but it was better to be safe for this first ride. Irene wiped her sweaty forehead and approached, offering a word of thanks to the guards, who now filtered back to their posts. The one who directly helped Lord Westfall turned in her direction, and Irene gave him a broad smile as she said in Halha, "Good morning, Shen." The young guard returned her smile as he continued toward the small stables in the far shadows of the courtyard, winking at her as he passed by.
"Morning, Irene."
She found Kaol sitting upright in the saddle when she faced ahead once more, that stiff posture and clenched jaw gone as he watched her approach. Irene straightened her dress, realizing just as she reached him that she still wore yesterday's clothes, now with a giant red splotch on her chest. Kaol took in the stain, then her hair. Oh, gods, her hair. And only said, "Good morning." Irene swallowed, still panting from her run. "I'm sorry I'm late." Up close, the brace indeed blended in enough for most people not to notice, especially with the way he carried himself. He sat tall and proud on that horse, shoulders squared, hair still wet from his morning bath. Irene swallowed again and inclined her head toward the unused mounting ramp across the courtyard. "That was also meant for your use, you know." He lifted his brows.
"I doubt there will be one readily available on a battlefield," he said, mouth twisting to the side. "So I might as well learn to mount on my own."
Indeed. But even with the crisp golden dawn around them, what she'd glimpsed within his wound, the army they might both face flashed before her, stretching the long shadows. Motion caught her eye, snapping Irene to alertness as Shen led a small white mare from those same shadows, saddled and ready for her. She frowned at her dress.
"If I'm riding," Kaol said simply, "so are you."
Perhaps that was what he'd muttered to the guards before they'd dispersed. Irene blurted, "I'm not. It's been a while since I rode one."
"If I can let four men help me onto this damned horse," he said simply,
the color still blooming in his cheeks,
"then you can get on one too."
From the tone, she knew it must have been embarrassing. She'd seen the expression on his face just now, but he'd done it. Gritted his teeth and done it. And with the guards helping him, she knew there were multiple reasons why he could barely glance at them, that it was not just the lone reminder of what he'd once been that made him tense up in their presence, refuse to even consider training with them. But that was not a conversation to be had now, not here, and not with the light starting to return to his eyes. So Irene hitched up her hem and let Shen help her onto the horse. The skirts of her dress hiked up enough to reveal most of her legs, but she'd seen far more revealed here, in this very courtyard. Neither Shen nor any other guards so much as glanced her way. She turned to Kaol to order him to go ahead,
but found his eyes on her. On the leg exposed from ankle to mid-thigh, paler than most of her golden-brown skin, she darkened easily in the sun. But it had been months since she'd gone swimming and basked in any sunlight. Kaol noticed her attention and snapped his eyes up to hers.
"You have a good seat,"
he told her, as clinically as she often remarked on the status of her patients' bodies. Irene gave him an exasperated look before nodding her thanks to Shen, and nudging her horse into a walk. Kaol snapped the reins, and did the same. She kept one eye on him as they rode toward the courtyard gates. The brace held. The saddle held. He was peering down at it, then at the gates, at the city awakening beyond them. The tower jutting high above it all as if it were a hand raised in bold welcome. Sunlight broke through the open archway, gilding them both. But Irene could have sworn it was far more than the dawn that shone in the captain's brown eyes as they rode into the city. It was not walking again, but it was better than the chair. Better than better. The brace was cumbersome, going against all his instincts as a rider, but it held him firm, allowed him to guide Irene through the gates, the healer clutching at the pommel every now and then, forgetting the reins entirely. Well, he'd found one thing she wasn't so self-assured at. The thought brought a small smile to his lips, especially as she kept adjusting her skirts. For all she'd chided him about his modesty, flashing her legs had given her pause. Men in the streets, workers and peddlers and city guards, looked twice, looked their fill, until they noticed his stare and averted their eyes. And Kaol made sure they did. Just as he'd made sure the guards in the courtyard had kept their attention polite the moment she'd run in, huffing and puffing, sun-kissed and flushed. Even with the stain on her clothes. Even wearing yesterday's dress and coated in a faint sheen of sweat. It had been mortifying to be helped into the saddle, like unruly baggage, after he'd refused the mounting ramp. Mortifying to see those guards in their pristine uniforms. The armor on their shoulders and hilts of their swords glinting in the early morning sunlight. All watching him fumble about. But he'd dealt with it. And then he found himself forgetting that entirely at the appreciative glances the guards gave her. No lady, beautiful or plain, young or old, deserved to be gawked at. And Irene. Kaol kept his mare close beside hers. Met the stare of any man who glanced their way as they rode toward the towering spire of the Torre. The stones pale as cream in the morning light. Every single man swiftly found somewhere else to gape. Some even looked apologetic. Whether Irene noticed, he had no clue. She was too busy lunging for the saddle horn at any unexpected movements of the horse. Too busy wincing as the mare increased her pace up a particularly steep street, causing her to sway and slide back in her saddle.
"Lean forward," he instructed her. "Balance your weight."
He did the same, as much as the brace allowed. Their horses slowly plowed up the streets, heads bobbing as they worked. Irene gave him a sharp glare. "I do know those things." He lifted his brows in a look that said, "Could have fooled me." She scowled, but faced ahead. Leaned forward as he'd instructed her. He'd been sleeping like the dead when Nezrin returned late last night. But she'd roused him long enough to say she hadn't discovered anything in regard to potential Volg in the city. No sewers connected to the Torre. And with the heavy guard at the walls, no one was getting in that way. He'd managed to hold on to consciousness long enough to thank her, and hear her promise to keep hunting today. But this cloudless, bright day? Definitely not the Volg's preferred darkness. Aelin had told him how the Volg princes could summon darkness for themselves. Darkness that struck down any living creature in its path, draining them dry. But even one Volg in this city, regardless of whether they were a prince or an ordinary grunt. Kaol pushed the thought from his mind, frowning up at the mammoth structure that grew more imposing with each street they crossed,
Towers, he mused, glancing toward Irene. Is it coincidence you bear that name? Or did your ancestors once hail from the Torre?
Her knuckles were white as she gripped the pommel, as if turning to look at him would send her toppling off. I don't know, she admitted. It was knowledge that I never learned.
He considered the words, the way she squinted at the bright pillar of the tower ahead rather than meet his stare. A child of Fenharrow. He didn't dare ask why she might not know the answer, where her family was.
Instead, he jerked his chin to the ring on her finger.
Does the fake wedding band really work?
She examined the ancient scuffed ring. I wish I could say otherwise, but it does.
You encounter that behavior here, in this wondrous city?
Very, very rarely. She wriggled her fingers before settling them around the saddle's pommel again. But it's an old habit from home. For a heartbeat, he recalled an assassin in a bloody white gown, collapsing at the entrance to the barracks. Recalled the poisoned blade the man had sliced her with, and had used with countless others.
I'm glad,
he said after a moment,
that you don't need to fear such things here.
Even the guards, for all their ogling, had been respectful. She'd even addressed one by name, and his returned warmth had been genuine. Irene clenched the saddle horn again. The Coggin holds all people accountable to the rule of the law, whether they're servants or princes. It shouldn't have been such a novel concept, yet.
Kaol blinked. Truly?
Irene shrugged. As far as I have heard and observed, lords cannot buy their way out of crimes committed, nor rely on their family names to bail them out. And would-be criminals in the streets see the exacting hand of justice, and rarely dare to tempt it. A pause. Did you?
He knew what she'd balked at asking. I was ordered to release or look the other way for nobility who had committed crimes. At least, the ones who were of value in court and in the king's armies.
She studied the pommel before her. And your new king?
He is different. If he was alive, if he had made it out of Rifthold.
Kaol forced himself to add,
Dorian has long studied and admired the Khaganate. Perhaps he'll put some of its policies into effect.
A long assessing glance now. Do you think the Coggin will ally with you? He hadn't told her that, but it was fairly obvious why he'd come, he supposed.
I can only hope.
Would his forces make that much of a difference against the powers you mentioned?
Kaol repeated. I can only hope.
He couldn't bring himself to voice the truth, that their armies were few and scattered if they existed at all, compared to the gathering might of Morath. What happened these months? A quiet, careful question.
Trying to trick me into talking.
I want to know.
It's nothing worth telling.
His story wasn't worth telling at all. Not a single part of it. She fell silent, the clopping of their horses' hooves the only sound for a block. Then, you will need to talk about it, at some point. I beheld glimpses of it within you yesterday.
Isn't that enough?
The question was sharp as the knife at his side. Not if it is what the thing inside you feeds on. Not if claiming ownership of it might help.
And you are so certain of this.
He should mind his tongue. He knew that, but... Irene straightened in her saddle. The trauma of any injury requires some internal reflection during the healing and aftermath.
I don't want it. Need it. I just want to stand, to walk again.
She shook her head. He charged on.
And what about you, then? How about we make a deal? You tell me all your deep, dark secrets, Irene Towers, and I'll tell you mine.
Indignation lit those remarkable eyes as she glared at him. He glared right back. Finally, Irene snorted, smiling faintly.
You're as stubborn as an ass.
I've been called worse, he countered, the beginnings of a smile tugging on his mouth.
I'm not surprised.
Kaol chuckled, catching the makings of a grin on her face before she ducked her head to hide it, as if sharing one with a son of Otterlin were such a crime.
Still, he eyed her for a long moment, the humor lingering on her face, the heavy, softly curling hair that was occasionally caught in the morning breeze off the sea, and found himself still smiling as something coiled tight in his chest began to loosen. They rode the rest of the way to the Torre in silence, and Kaol tipped his head back as they neared, walking down a broad, sunny avenue that sloped upward to the hilltop complex. The Torre was even more dominating up close. It was broad, more of a keep than anything, but still rounded. Buildings flanked its sides, connected on lower levels, all enclosed by towering white walls. The iron gates, fashioned to look like an owl spreading its wings, thrown wide to reveal lavender bushes and flower beds lining the sand-colored gravel walkways. Not flower beds. Herb beds. The smells of them opening to the morning sun filled his nose. Basil and mint and sage, and more of that lavender. Even their horses, hooves crunching on the walkways, seemed to sigh as they approached. Guards in what he assumed were Torre colors, cornflower blue and yellow, let them pass without question, and Irene bowed her head in thanks. They did not look at her legs, did not either dare or have the inclination to disrespect. Kaol glanced away from them before he could meet their questioning stares. Irene took the lead, guiding them through an archway and into the complex courtyard. Windows of the three-story building wrapped around the courtyard gleamed with the light of the rising sun. But inside the courtyard itself, beyond the murmur of awakening Antica outside the compound, beyond the hooves of their horses on the pale gravel, there was only the gurgle of twin fountains anchored against parallel walls of the courtyard, their spouts shaped like screeching owl beaks, spewing water into deep basins below. Pale pink and purple flowers lined the walls between lemon trees. The beds tidy, but left to grow as the plants willed. It was one of the more serene places he had ever laid eyes on. And watching them approach, 2 dozen women in dresses of every color, though most of the simple make Irene favored. They stood in neat rows on the gravel, some barely more than children, some well into their prime. A few were elderly, including one woman, dark-skinned and white-haired, who strode from the front of the line and smiled broadly at Irene. It was not a face that had ever held any beauty, but there was a light in the woman's eyes, a kindness and serenity that made Kaol blink in wonder. All the others watched her, as if she were the axis around which they were ordered. Even Irene, who smiled at the woman as she dismounted, looked grateful to be off the mare. One of the guards who had trailed them in came to retrieve the horse, but hesitated as Kaol remained astride. Kaol ignored the man, as Irene finger-combed her tangled hair and spoke to the ancient woman in his tongue. I take it the good crowd this morning is thanks to you.
Light words, perhaps an attempt at normalcy, considering what had happened in the library. The old woman smiled.
Such warmth.
She was brighter than the sun peeking above the compound walls. The girls heard a rumor of a handsome lord coming to teach. I was practically trampled in the stampede down the stairs. She cast a wry grin to 3 red-faced girls, no older than 15, who looked guiltily at their shoes, and then shot looks at him beneath their lashes that were anything but. Kaol stifled a laugh. Irene turned to him, assessing the brace and the saddle as the crunch of approaching wheels on gravel filled the courtyard. The amusement faded. Dismounting in front of these women.
Enough.
The words sounded through him. If he could not endure it in front of a group of the world's best healers,
then he would deserve to suffer. He had offered his help. He would give it. For indeed, there were some younger girls in the back who were pale, shifting on their feet, nervous. This sanctuary, this lovely place. A shadow had crept over it. He would do what he could to push it back.
Lord Kaol Westfall, Irene said to him, gesturing to the ancient woman, may I present Hafiza, healer on high of the Torre Chesme.
One of the blushing girls sighed at the sound of his name. Irene's eyes danced, but Kaol inclined his head to the old woman as she extended her hands up to him. The skin was leathery, as warm as her smile. She squeezed his fingers tightly.
As handsome as Irene said.
I said no such thing, Irene hissed.
One of the girls giggled. Irene cut her a warning look, and Kaol lifted his brows before saying to Hafiza,
it is an honor and a pleasure, my lady.
So dashing,
one of the girls murmured behind him.
Wait until you see my dismount, he almost said.
Hafiza squeezed his hands once more and dropped them. She faced Irene, waiting. Irene only clapped her hands together and said to the girls assembled,
Lord Westfall has suffered a severe injury to his lower spine and finds walking difficult. Yesterday, Syndra in the workshop crafted this brace for him, based upon the designs from the horse tribes in the steppes, who have long dealt with such injuries for their riders.
She waved a hand to indicate his legs, the brace. With every word, his shoulders stiffened, more and more.
If you are faced with a patient in a similar situation, Irene went on, the freedom of riding may be a pleasant alternative to a carriage or palanquin, especially if they were used to a certain level of independence beforehand.
She added upon consideration,
or even if they have faced mobility difficulties their entire lives, it may provide a positive option while you heal them.
Little more than an experiment. Even the blushing girls had lost their smiles as they studied the brace. His legs. Irene asked them,
who should like to assist Lord Westfall from his mount to his chair?
A dozen hands shot up. He tried to smile. Tried and failed. Irene pointed at a few who rushed over. None looked up at him above the waist or even bid him good morning. Irene lifted her voice as they crowded around her, making sure those assembled in the courtyard could also hear.
For patients completely immobilized, this may not be an option. But Lord Westfall retains the ability to move above his waist and can steer the horse with the reins. Balance and safety, of course, remain concerns. But another is that he retains use and sensation of his manhood, which also presents a few hiccups regarding the comfort of the brace itself.
One of the younger girls let out a giggle at that, but most only nodded, looking directly at the area indicated, as if he had no clothes on whatsoever, face heaving. Kaol restrained the urge to cover himself. Two young healers began unstrapping the brace, some examining the buckles and rods. Still, they did not look him in the eye, as if he were some new toy, new lesson, some oddity. Irene merely went on.
Mind you don't jostle him too much when you—
Careful!
He fought to keep his features distant, found himself missing the guards from the palace. Irene gave the girls firm, solid directions as they tugged him down from the saddle. He didn't try to help the acolytes or fight them when they pulled at his arms, someone going to steady his waist, the world tilting as they hauled him downward. But the weight of his body was too great, and he felt himself slide farther from the saddle, the drop to the ground looming, the sun a brand on his skin. The girls grunted, someone going to the other side to help move his leg up and over the horse. Or he thought so. He only knew it because he saw her head of curls just peek over the horse's side. She pushed, jutting his leg upward.
And he hung there, three girls gritting their teeth while they tried to lower him, the others watching in observational silence. One of the girls let out an oof and lost her grip on his shoulder. The world plunged. Strong, unfaltering hands caught him, his nose barely half a foot from the pale gravel, as the other girls shuffled and grunted, trying to heft him up again. He'd come free of the horse, but his legs were now sprawled beneath him, as distant from him as the very top of the torre, high above. Roaring filled his head. A sort of nakedness crept over him. Worse than sitting in his undershorts for hours. Worse than the bath with the servant. Irene, gripping his shoulder from where she'd just barely caught him in time, said to the healers, "That could have been better, girls. A great deal better for many reasons." A sigh. "We can discuss what went wrong later. But for now, move him to the chair." He could barely stand to hear her, listen to her, as he hung between those girls, most of whom were half his weight. Irene stepped aside to let the girl who dropped him back into place, whistling sharply. Wheels hissed on gravel from nearby. He didn't bother to look at the wheeled chair that an acolyte pushed closer. Didn't bother to speak as they settled him in it, the chair shuddering beneath his weight. "Careful," Irene warned again. The girls lingered. The rest of the courtyard still watching. Had it been seconds or minutes since this ordeal had begun? He clenched the arms of the chair as Irene rattled off some directions and observations. Clenched the arms harder as one of the girls stooped to touch his booted feet, to arrange them for him. Words rose up his throat, and he knew they'd burst from him. Knew he could do little to stop his bellow to back off as that acolyte's fingers neared the dusty black leather. Withered brown hands landed on the girl's wrist, halting her mere inches away. Hafiza said calmly,
"Let me."
The girls peeled back, as Hafiza stooped to help him instead.
"Get the ladies ready, Irene,"
Hafiza said over a slim shoulder. And Irene obeyed, ushering them back into their lines. The ancient woman's hands lingered on his boots, his feet currently pointing in opposite directions.
"Shall I do it, Lord, or would you like to?"
Words failed him, and he wasn't certain he could use his hands without them shaking, so he gave the woman a nod of approval. Hafiza straightened one foot, waiting until Irene had walked a few steps away and begun giving stretching instructions to the ladies.
"This is a place for learning," Hafiza murmured. "Older students teach the younger."
Even with her accent, he understood her perfectly.
"It was Irene's instinct, Lord Westfall, to show the girls what she did with the brace. To let them learn for themselves what it is to have a patient with similar difficulties. To receive this training, Irene herself had to venture out onto the steps. Many of these girls might not have that opportunity. At least, not for several years."
Kaol met Hafiza's eyes at last, finding the understanding in them more damning than being hauled off a horse by a group of girls half his weight.
"She means well, my Irene."
He didn't answer. He wasn't sure he had words. Hafiza straightened his other foot.
"There are many other scars, my lord, beyond the one on her neck."
He wanted to tell the old woman that he knew that too damn well. But he shoved down that barrenness, that simmering roar in his head. He had made these ladies a promise to teach them, to help them. Hafiza seemed to read that, sense it. She only patted his shoulder before she rose to her full height, groaning a bit, and walked back to the place left for her in line. Irene had turned toward him, stretching done, and scanned him, as if Hafiza's lingering presence had indicated something she'd missed. Her eyes settled on his, brows narrowing. "What's wrong?" He ignored the question within her look, ignored the bit of worry.
shoved whatever he felt down deep and rolled in his chair toward her. Inch by inch. The gravel was not ideal, but he gritted his teeth. He'd given these ladies his word. He would not back down from it.
"Where did we leave off the last lesson?"
Irene asked a girl in the front.
"Eye gouge," she said with a broad smile.
Kaol nearly choked.
"Right,"
Irene said, rubbing her hands together.
"Someone demonstrate for me?"
He watched in silence as hands shot up, and Irene selected one, a smaller boned girl. Irene took up the stance of attacker, grabbing the girl from the front with surprising intensity. But the girl's slim hands went right to Irene's face, thumbs to the corners of her eyes. Kaol started from his chair. Or would have, had the girl not pulled back.
"And next?"
Irene merely asked.
"Hook in my thumbs like this?"
The girl made the motion in the air between them for all to see.
"And pop."
Some of the girls laughed quietly at the accompanying pop the girl made with her mouth. Aelin would have been beside herself with glee.
"Good,"
Irene said, and the girl strode back to her place in line. Irene turned to him, that worry again flashing as she beheld whatever was in his eyes, and said,
"This is our third lesson of this quarter. We have covered front-based attacks only so far. I usually have the guards come in as willing victims."
Some snickers at that.
"But today I would like for you to tell us what you think, ladies, young and old, strong and frail, could do against any sort of attack. Your list of top maneuvers and tips, if you'd be so kind."
He'd trained young men ready to shed blood, not heal people. But defense was the first lesson he'd been taught, and had taught those young guards, before they'd wound up hanging from his castle gates. Ress's battered, unseeing face flashed into his mind. What good had it done any of them when it mattered? Not one. Not one of that core group he'd trusted and trained, worked with for years. Not one had survived. Brullo, his mentor and predecessor, had taught him all he knew. And what had it earned any of them? Anyone he'd encountered, he'd touched. They'd suffered. The lives he'd sworn to protect. The sun turned bleaching, the gurgle of the twin fountains a distant melody. What good had any of it done for his city, his people, when it was sacked? He looked up to find the lines of women watching him, curiosity on their faces, waiting. There had been a moment when he had hurled his sword into the aviary, when he had been unable to bear its weight at his side, in his hand, and had chucked it and everything the captain of the guard had been, had meant, into the dark, eddying waters. He'd been sinking and drowning since, long before his spine. He wasn't certain if he'd even tried to swim. Not since that sword had gone into the river. Not since he'd left Dorian in that room with his father and told his friend, his brother, that he loved him and knew it was goodbye. He'd left, in every sense of the word. Kaol forced himself to take a breath, to try. Irene stepped up to his side as his silence stretched on, again looking so puzzled and concerned. As if she could not figure out why he might have been the least bit. He shoved the thought down. And the others. Shoved them down to the silt-thick bottom of the aviary, where that eagle-pommeled sword now lay, forgotten and rusting. Kaol lifted his chin, looking each girl and woman and crone in the face. Healers and servants and librarians and cooks, Irene had said.
"When an attacker comes at you," he said at last, "they will likely try to move you somewhere else. Never let them do it. If you do, wherever they take you will be the last place you see."
He'd gone to enough murder sites in Rifthold, read and looked into enough cases to know the truth in that.
"If they try to move you from your current location, you make that your battleground."
"We know that,"
one of the blushing girls said.
"That was Irene's first lesson."
Irene nodded gravely at him. He again did not let himself look at her neck.
Stomping on the instep?
He could barely manage a word to Irene.
First lesson also?
The same girl replied instead of Irene.
What about how debilitating it is to receive a blow to the groin?
Nods all around. Irene certainly knew her fair share of maneuvers. Kaol smiled grimly.
What about? Ways to get a man my size or larger flipped onto their backs in less than 2 moves.
Some of the girls smiled as they shook their heads. It wasn't reassuring.
Chapter 15.
Irene felt the anger simmering off Kaol, as if it were heat rippling from a kettle. Not at the girls and women. They adored him, grinned and laughed, even as they concentrated on his thorough, precise lesson, even as the events in the library hung over them, the Torre, like a gray shroud. There had been many tears last night at the vigil, and a few red eyes still in the halls this morning as she'd hurtled past. Mercifully, there had been no sign of either, when Lord Kaol called in 3 guards to volunteer their bodies for the girls to flip into the gravel. Over and over. The men agreed, perhaps because they knew that any injuries would be fussed over and patched up by the greatest healers outside Doranel. Kaol even returned their smiles. Ladies and, to her shock, guards alike. But Irene? She received none of them. Not one. Kaol's face only went hard, eyes glinting with frost, whenever she stepped in to ask a question or watch him walk an acolyte through the motions. He was commanding, his unrelenting focus missing nothing. If they had so much as 1 foot in the wrong position, he caught it before they moved an inch. The hour-long lesson ended with each of them flipping a guard onto his back. The poor men limped off, smiling broadly. Mostly because Hafiza promised them a cask of ale each, and her strongest healing tonic, which was better than any alcohol. The women dispersed as the bells chimed 10, some to lessons, some to chores, some to patience. A few of the sillier girls lingered, batting their eyelashes toward Lord Westfall, one even looking inclined to perch in his lap, before Hafiza dryly reminded her of a pile of laundry with her name on it. Before the healer on high hobbled after the acolyte, Hafiza merely gave Irene what she could have sworn was a warning, knowing look. Well, Irene said to Kaol when they were again alone, despite the gaggle of girls peering out one of the Torre's windows. They noticed Irene's stare and snapped their heads back in, slamming the window with riotous giggles. Silba save her from teenage girls. She'd never been one, not like that. Not so carefree. She hadn't even kissed a man until last autumn. Certainly had never giggled over one. She wished she had. Wished for a lot of things that had ended with that pyre and those torches.
That went better than expected,
Irene said to Kaol, who was frowning up at the looming Torre.
I'm sure they'll be begging me next week for you to return. If you're interested, I suppose.
He said nothing. She swallowed.
I would like to try again today, if you're up for it. Would you prefer I find a room here, or shall we ride back to the palace?
He met her stare then. His eyes were dark.
The palace.
Her stomach twisted at the icy tone.
All right, was all she managed to say,
and walked off in search of the guards and their horses. They rode back in silence. They'd been quiet during portions of the ride over, but this was pointed, heavy.
Irene racked her memory for what she might have said during the lesson, what she might have forgotten. Perhaps seeing the guards so active had reminded him of what he did not currently have.
Perhaps just seeing the guards themselves had set him down this path. She mused over it as they returned to the palace, while he was aided by Shen and another guard into the awaiting chair. He offered only a tight smile in thanks. Lord Kaol looked up at her over a shoulder, the morning heat rising enough to make the courtyard stifling.
Are you going to push it, or shall I?
Irene blinked.
You can move it yourself just fine, she said, her proverbial heels digging in at that tone.
Perhaps you should ask one of your acolytes to